Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Jamie Bologna.
Are you doing that on purpose? Or can't you make up your mind?
That's the trouble. I can't make up my mind. I haven't got a brain. Only straw.
How can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
I don't know. But some people without brains do an awful lot of talking, don't they?
That, of course, are the very first moments between Dorothy, Judy Garland, and Scarecrow in the 1939 classic The Wizard of Oz. And those smart words from a man without a brain were spoken by Dorchester native Ray Bolger. Bolger's Scarecrow captured the public's imagination some 80 years ago, and still today. And he was a star in his own right, with a career in theater and movies, television and dance that spanned over 50 years. So why don't we know more about his career as a dancer on the streets of Boston? Well, author Holly Van Leeuwen is trying to change that. She's the author of the first biography of Bolger. It's titled Ray Bolger, More Than a Scarecrow. Holly, welcome to Radio Boston. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Jamie. It's a pleasure.
So you've been working on this book for 10 years. What caught your attention about the Scarecrow and Ray Bolger?
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. I myself am still in my 20s. I've been involved in studying musicals of the 1930s and 40s since I was a child, really. And like many people, I was first captivated by The Wizard of Oz. And there's so much going on in that movie, from the special effects to, of course, the performances. And a lot of people have told me in the course of researching this book that Ray is really the one as the Scarecrow that sticks in their minds and has a real emotional pull for them. And so I began over years just sort of casually researching him and finding what I could. It snowballed into a much bigger effort that took me to all kinds of far-flung places. I actually moved to Boston around the time that I learned about his own origins here in Dorchester and Cambridge, how he learned to dance in the streets of the Back Bay and Scully Square.
Yeah, tell us about that. Dancing in the streets.
What is that about? So Ray Bolger was born in 1904. He came of age sort of in the teens and the 20s, and he had a sort of difficult home life. His mother passed away when he was 15. His father had health problems. They came from the working class, and he was one of two children. He was the oldest. He had a younger sister. But really, the family struggled financially. And I can't really think of a person, if you just looked at his early life, that would be less likely to become an icon of American cinema.
He was a bank teller at one point, right?
Yeah, so he had to work. He had jobs to support his family. He worked at the First National Bank of Boston, and he also worked at New England Mutual Life. He was eventually fired from New England Mutual Life by an efficiency expert because he came in late. And he came in late because the office was right there on Milk Street. And he was enchanted by the performers of Scully Square, by vaudeville, by burlesque. And that was a time in the teens and the 20s where dance was such a part of the everyman's culture. There were people down there, you could see, you know, very cheap performances.
In Scully Square,
which, exactly.
Just for folks who might not know where that is, could you describe it for
us?
Yeah,
so it's kind of down, the easiest way to think of it is sort of that government center-ish area that goes by Washington Street. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there would be challenge dances that come up just on the streets. They're seeing a performer in town and they're doing steps out on the sidewalk. And it was very sort of fluid. There was, a lot of vaudeville presence. So you could find performers. And so much of tap dance in particular, which Ray Bolger is actually known for, you don't see so much of that in The Wizard of Oz. But tap is very iterative. And so you learn a lot through mimicry. And so you're finding people who can teach you cool steps and combinations. And then you're running to the other side of town because you've heard so-and-so is an old vaudevillian who could show you something. And so really that was what captivated Ray Bolger's imagination as a young man. He had plenty of family problems. He could have gone down a much different path, really. But there was something in that that was so freeing for him. And he was very, very good at it. And he learned how to connect with audiences. And he learned how to kind of pull on the emotional heartstrings of people. And in the performances that we have of him that are preserved on film, we certainly see that in the Scarecrow performance. But also just contemporary accounts of him. This was a man who actually became a Broadway star. He essentially ran away to vaudeville after his early days in Boston.
Yeah, so how does he go from Scully Square to The Wizard of Oz?
Exactly. It's a pretty big trajectory for him. So he actually learned to dance not only from his contemporaries in Boston, other young men, other people looking to break in. It's much easier to do that back then, by the way. You know, everybody could get in on the action. There wasn't really an established celebrity system back then or anything. So it was kind of a free-for-all. But he learned to dance primarily from two different studios in the Boston area. One was O'Brien School for Social and Formal Dancing, which he did not excel at particularly. But he also learned to dance from a Russian ballet ballet teacher in the Back Bay. Hmm. And from that, we actually see a lot of his character dance. He also specialized in what is known as eccentric dance.
They called him rubber legs,
exactly, right? Because he had this very natural flexibility. So when you see the Scarecrow doing the splits in The Wizard of Oz, you think that's kind of a sight gag or something. But for decades before and after, he could go down into a full split and pull himself out of it and go down and come up. He was highly flexible. He could do the high kicks. He could do a lot of hip action. So he was experiencing all that as a young man. He was finding what his range of motion was and what he could do, and he was having fun. And so actually, from his dance classes, he got recruited out by the owner of a repertory company, who said, "I didn't really hire him for his skill as much as for his funny-looking face at the time." So he really got his start kind of in comedy, using comedy for dance, touring all kinds of small towns in very intimate settings. And from there, he was able to break into the New York theater scene, into dance, and eventually work his way up through into Broadway.
And then eventually to movies.
And then to movies, exactly.
So we actually have a clip here of a 1936 film, The Great Ziegfeld, where Bulger starred as himself. And here's just a little bit of him dancing around a stage. It's filled with women in very elaborate, frilly dresses.
If she's riding in the limousine with some millionaire or a college dean, if she's the grandest thing you've ever seen, then she's not my girl. If her smile is like the southern skies with California sunshine in her eyes, if she's the type that you could idolize, then she's not the girl for me.
So despite his success in this movie and his success on Broadway, as you're telling us about, you know, when he was cast in The Wizard of Oz, it was because the film wanted people who weren't that famous to be in it? Can you explain that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the clip that we just heard from The Great Ziegfeld, that was actually a really pivotal moment for Ray's life. And that was really what took him from being primarily a Broadway star into Hollywood. Mm. So the story of The Wizard of Oz is actually rife with coincidences of all kinds. The reason that MGM asked Ray to perform in The Great Ziegfeld was because he had been a high success in a show called Life Begins at 8:40 on Broadway, which was written in part by Yipper Harburg and Harold Arlen, who would go on to write the music and the film book for The Wizard of Oz, mm-hmm. and also the lyrics. And so he was finally lured out. This was a time where when the Hollywood studio systems were setting up, they were pulling so much talent from Broadway because they knew they could sing, they could dance, they could act. Ray really tried to find the right moment to jump. He didn't want to go before he was too soon, you know, not established enough on Broadway. So what happened with The Great Ziegfeld was they gave him essentially a two-picture contract to try things out. Hmm. And this was the first film that he did for MGM. And this film, actually, for its time, was really something. It's the biopic of Florence Ziegfeld, known for the Ziegfeld Follies. It was developed in part by Ziegfeld's widow, who is Billie Burke, who would become Glinda in The Wizard of Oz. So these people are all really interconnected. Film and Broadway are very fluid at this time. And he did so well in this film. The film won Best Picture, and he really had a name for himself. And so they put him in a picture contract, something a little bit more formal. But what do you do with somebody like that? He's so fluid. He's so individual.
You cast him as a scarecrow,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So he was actually so frustrated with Hollywood because he's a very improvisational type dancer. He thought it was very regimented. There's a lot of repetition. There's a lot of stopping and recording taps and then going back and trying to dance. So he was really almost ready to throw in the towel. And they said, well, we have one movie that we think is just right for you. And so he stuck it out for The Wizard of Oz. And as he actually said throughout his life, he said, I've never received residuals for The Wizard of Oz, just immortality, and I'll settle for that. So it ended up being a good deal for him.
And he had, you know, there's so much to talk about.
I know.
I would love to, if we could, also talk about his wife, Gwen, because
yes.
You write so beautifully in the book. You say the importance of Gwen entering Ray's life cannot be overstated. She was a surprising choice for his bride, but their union was the prime reason that Bulger became a star. Can you tell us briefly about his wife, Gwen?
Absolutely. So I'll let Ray do a little talking. But in his day, Ray said of Gwen, "Gwen does everything for me except dance." And as I put forth in the book, at the heart of Ray, he was what I call the timeless wanderer. He was a vaudevillian. He loved the shtick. He loved the intimacy. He loved being in front of a live audience. And had he not had Gwen, who he actually met in vaudeville, she was in the audience of a show that he came out and he was performing in, and she saw immediately what he could be. Ray on his own would have kind of stuck in the small time, I think. And Gwen really saw him and said, if we clean up your act, if we change the way you dress, if we change your character a little bit.
Change everything about you,
yeah.
I guess.
Except she really saw the heart of him. She saw the physicality, the talent. And, of course, they blended very well personally. So he really came to trust her. And she advised him on all sorts of things. Ray won a Tony Award on Broadway in 1949 for Best Actor in a Musical. It was a full decade after The Wizard of Oz. And she was actually the first female producer of a musical comedy for her contributions to that stage show. So she was a force of nature. She really understood business and art. And she got a lot of training here in Boston when he would try out different shows here. She was learning as the shows were being put together. So she became highly, highly influential and respected for what she did. She could be very opinionated, mm-hmm. but people learned to respect that, especially as it related to Ray, because they knew that nobody understood him as well as she did.
So speaking of someone who's a force of nature in the business, I also want to talk about Judy Garland.
Absolutely.
Because they had this sort of lifelong friendship and relationship. And I want to play a little bit of tape here. This is Bulger on the Judy Garland Show in 1964, where he reflects with her about the movie and how it was one of his greatest life memories.
I was brought up on the books of The Wizard of Oz, and my mother told me that these were great philosophies. It was a very simple philosophy that everybody had a heart, that everybody had a brain, that everybody had courage. These were the gifts that given you come on this earth. And if you use them properly, you reach the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And that pot of gold was a home.
Yeah.
And home isn't just a house or an abode. It's people, people who love you and that you love. That's a home.
So what is it about this movie that calls to people even now, decades later?
I think it really is the emotional pull. There has to be something to the fact that we all see it, most of us do, when we're very young. And so it holds that kind of nostalgia. But the glue that I think, having watched it thousands of times, that really holds it together is the love that Judy Garland and Ray Bolger actually have for each other. You know, there's that whole perfect line at the end, I'll miss you most of all.
Let's hear that. Let's hear that, guys.
You know, I know it isn't right, but I'm going to miss the way you used to holler for help before you found your courage.
I would never have found it if it hadn't been for you.
I think I'll miss you most of all.
So in the last, 45 seconds that we have here, Holly, what is it about the Scarecrow and about Ray Bolger that we can take with our lives today?
What you see in that clip in particular in the whole movie, which is also why Judy and Ray had a great personal relationship. Ray was really a child at heart. And through all kinds of things that happened to him, he went through every major, basically, era of show business into Las Vegas. He never lost that childish sense of innocence. And he showed us how we could find that in ourselves. And that comes out in the performances and the films that we still have available to us.
Well, that's Holly Van Leeuwen. She's the author of the new biography, Ray Bolger, More Than a Scarecrow. She'll be at the Harvard Bookstore tonight. There's more information about that at our website, radioboston.org. Holly, thank you for this book, and thank you for bringing Ray's story to Radio Boston today.
Thank you so much.
That's it for Radio Boston today and this week. I'm Jamie Bologna, and this is Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.